The guest on this episode is my friend Matt. He's from the East Coast, but relocated to Denver, and he's part of the Just Be Social squad on the old Twitter device, which includes a few of my previous guests on this podcast, too. Matt's a good dude. We overlap on the sports fandom, meme fandom, and recruiter internet ecosystem worlds, the difference being he's actually in recruiting, and I just talk about it periodically. In this episode, we start on Bills Mafia, because he's a big Buffalo Bills fan. Talk about whether Buffalo people can have nice things, i.e. could this be the year with Tom Brady out of New England? Then we talk about housing prices, buying homes, relationships, and whether people stay friends when they stop being coworkers. Hope you mostly enjoy this. Now, also, if you came across the quote-unquote original episode art for this episode and you see a Bills fan with his posterior on fire, that is not a picture of Matt. That is a USA Today screen grab that I stole. All right, let's roll. There's a broader life lesson in it, because there's this like Buffalo mentality where like you can't expect positive things to happen. So I just wondered what your take on it was right now.
It's, you know, with all the years of watching the team be bad and watching Buffalo sports have the potential to be good and then just fail, I'm just scared. Like, there's, I think they have a legitimate shot of winning the division, but I'm still scared of the Patriots. Like, who knows what they're going to be able to pull out of their ass and, you know, do.
And I mean, like, I think it'll be interesting too, like, because it's almost like that the bullshit, like, A player discussion that we have work is like, okay, now any critic of Belichick who, like, okay, you had that Matt Castle season where Brady got hurt for the whole season and they were still like 11-5. So even if you don't care about that year, any critic of Belichick, it's like, okay, well, what happens if he comes out with like Jarrett Stidham or like Cam Newton or whatever, and he goes like 12-4? Then it's like, oh, okay, maybe it wasn't completely about Brady, right? So I think it'll be interesting. Like, it's going to challenge a lot of people's baseline assumptions about, like, talent, which will be interesting. Like, I'm sure there'll be a – like, if they start out, like, 8-1, there's going to be so many bad, like, TA and HR Tech articles.
Oh, my God. I can't wait.
Yeah. About, like, the parallels between that and, like, finding purple squirrels or whatever. But I think that'll be interesting, because it's like, okay, what if one of them in isolation, what if their team is terrible? Or what if both of them in isolation, the teams are good? Then it's like, okay, it's a small sample size. It's only 1 year. But you still have to start questioning some assumptions, which I feel like, you know, that's always hard for people.
Yeah, it's, I'm excited, but also scared at the same time, because I don't want to have my expectations too high, but I also don't know what to expect. And it's at the same time, though, like, everyone in the Bills organization is new within the last, what, 3 years, four years since Sean McDermott's been there. And they were talking about this last year after they made the playoffs. Like, no one in there was part of the drought and part of the seasons where they had high expectations and then they, you know, shit the bed or, you know, whatnot. And so they had that mentality and mindset of, yeah, we've made the playoffs 2 out of the last 3 years. Like, this is who we are. Then you have the whole fan base of the just going, oh my God, is this real? Are we like actually good now?
Yeah.
I don't know what to believe.
Well, then it's like also, then you get into this weird like culture discussion where it's like, okay, if you have a bad company or you work at like a shitty company and the, like, let's say even because of COVID or whatever, if the company wipes out all these people, like there's a bunch of layoffs And those were people that were like status quo, failure, like checking Instagram all day people. And then you bring in these like real, like passionate, like KPI people or whatever. Like, does that just like wholesale change the culture, right? I think you see it in sports all the time where it's like, oh, this franchise has been shitty for 10 years. And then you just get like a wave of people in across 3 years and it feels like everything changes. We're still kind of waiting for that on the Browns, I feel like. In the last 2 years, you felt that tipping point was there, but it's not really there yet.
Yeah, and I think you make a good point of like, it's not, it's got to be like a wave of people. Yeah. Like I've seen it where it's been one or two people and they are able to make a little bit of progress. But until you get the buy-in from more people or right. bring in more people who fit what you're trying to do, then you're going to have the Browns where it feels like they're on the verge of something,
but
then it all collapses.
I always feel like at work, what I wish people would understand, but like nobody ever seems to understand, is that like literally, I guess it depends on the size of the organization, because bigger ones are like micro decisions don't mean as much. But like if you literally take one like asshole sales driven, money driven person and you move them to like a management tier where they have like 10 to 12 people under them, like just that one move, especially in like a 200 person company, just that one move can like negatively impact stuff for like 5 years, and nobody seems to understand that. It has so many ties to like turnover and morale and whatever, right? And it's just like people don't ever seem to think about that shit when they like when they write articles or when they analyze like the finance. Like I always feel like, I don't know how to do this explicitly, but I always feel like if a manager in a company generates like X amount of revenue, I think you should deduct like the recruiting and costs or whatever associated with backfilling that person's department. And that should be the number that they're associated with, right? But nobody seems to ever think that way. So I don't know. Maybe I'm just naive on that.
No, I think like I know when I was a first put in a management role, like other than the fact that I had no idea what I was doing, I looking back now, I'm like, wow, there was I certainly not, you know, one of the like asshole, you know, KPI crunchers, you know,
right.
I tend to just focus on me and let the team do what they do and
yeah.
only jump in when needed, which is good in some cases and not so good in other cases.
Right.
And it was quite the learning experience for me of just being like, all right, there's certainly that balance between being hands-on and engaged, but also not overly hands-on, but also making sure that they're hitting their numbers and doing what they need to do. Right. And
I think that's probably like the essential balance. Like if you were to try to define management in like one sentence or whatever, like a Twitter bio, I think that's probably what it is like trying to figure out where that line is, you know, because you don't, I think everybody hates having like super overbearing managers, but in some like situations and projects, it makes sense. Right.
And like then you get a new team and then you have to start all over and figure out what everyone's preferences and what they're good at and not.
Like I just got sent probably 2-3 days ago. I got sent a LinkedIn DM about, I see you're in the sheet metal industry. Right. I was like, hey, I just responded to the guy and I'm like, hey, it's actually not like a bad cold message or whatever, but like I'm not in the sheet metal industry and I post there a decent amount and I don't think I've ever even used the word sheet metal. So I was like, how this happened, right? And the guy wrote me back and he's like, just what we were talking about. He's like, I got this new team and I told them to like roll out this cold LinkedIn campaign and I didn't like micromanage my expectations. And then we got into like a weird sidebar, like we actually started talking. Like, obviously I'm not gonna buy sheet metal, right?
Really? No need for that.
But we started talking and he was like, yeah, it's annoying because they rolled out this campaign to all these people that would never need to buy sheet metal. So he's like, now if anything, let's say you were in procurement at some company and maybe in like 6 months you do need sheet metal. He's like, I just hope I didn't alienate those people. And I was like, well, people forget about shit in a business context quickly because it moves pretty fast. Mm. But I was like, it's interesting that like his default was like, oh, I should have micromanaged them more on this. And clearly he should have, because I'm like, I don't know why I got this message. You know? But I thought it was funny that was like where the discussion went, you know? Because I agree with you, there are some times where you do need to kind of like be on top of it in terms of structure or whatever, that I think people sometimes unilaterally are like, this is good, this is bad. And like, it's actually like a mix of the two, you know?
Yeah. And like for me, like starting this job in November and having a whole new group of people, like I was used to hiring people, you know, fresh out of school, no experience, and had this exact game plan in mind of like how to train them, how, you know, knowing when to be on top of what's going on versus not. Then I come here and the team's all experienced and, you know, they've been doing this forever. I'm like, oh shit, now everything's, you know, flipped on its head from what I'm used to doing. And, you know, my default is to be more hands off. And that has definitely come back to bite me a couple of times where, even though they're more experienced, like I'm still trying to figure out with some of them, like what's that good, happy balance between being involved and not being involved.
Yeah. Okay. So I was going to ask too, what'd you end up doing with that house? Are you like moving forward on that? Or did you like, I wanted to know what the experience of even approaching that type of life decision during a fucking pandemic would be like.
So we didn't move forward with that one. Largely because it was the pandemic, and we're like, you know, it was early on, and we're like, we don't know what's gonna happen. We don't know how this is gonna play out.
Right.
Downside, it ended up going under contract a couple weeks ago, I think. So at this point, we missed out on it. But at the same time, like we had a number in mind that we said if they agreed to this, then yeah, we were probably going to move forward with it. But they were dead set on the number that they had put it up for.
Right.
And they were originally going to counter our offer with the original price.
Okay.
And
what was the general difference, like 20,000, 15,000 or more?
It was we were hoping for about 10,000.
Okay. That's less. Not even that bad, honestly.
No, but we went in at like 20 under, hoping to find that balance in between. But they're like, nope.
Yeah,
normal.
I live like a block over from this one house, and it's like not very nice. It's like generally pretty shitty from the outside. And then I think like a late 80s woman was living in there, and she passed away. And so right before COVID stuff, I went to like an estate sale in there, and the inside's like not. It's very like 1940s style, so. You would probably have to like redo it, right? So I was walking my dog one day, like maybe 3-4 weeks ago, and I saw a lady putting up the for sale sign on it. And I was like, hey, just out of curiosity, like, what are you putting this up for? And she was like, oh, $425. And I was like, you gotta be like, when you add up everything, that would probably be over a $500,000 home, and it is nowhere near that, right? So on one contract thing I do,
I like met this guy who's like a multimillionaire, like developer in like basically Western United States. And I'm like semi-friendly with him. So I texted him like the specs on that house. And he was like, oh, this shouldn't be a cent over like $300,000. So like every time I walk my dog past that house, which is at least once a day, that for sale sign is still there. Nothing's changed on the sign. I've never in a month, like sometimes I walk my dog past on that block like four times a day. I've never once seen a person go to visit that home. Right. So yeah. I just kind of wonder sometimes like how people think they can get away with this shit, especially it's obviously, even if you think that everything is like a conspiracy or a lie or whatever, like it's obviously, or if you have a job, it's like, it's obviously the economy is generally down, right? Like there's not, I don't think that anyone is like, man, this is a boom time. So like, yeah, I'm sure there's somebody in Texas that will buy that at like 400 to 425. I'm sure that will eventually happen. But I just wonder like how people think they can get away with that type of stuff.
Yeah. It's interesting. Cause like here, everything is seeming to suggest that like prices will only go down 1 to 2%. And even though supply may be down, the people out looking to buy is also down as well. So it's almost still status quo. And like there's a house in our neighborhood here that's been for sale for a while, but people have been renting it. And it's one of those, like in this neighborhood, it'll be torn down and built up with something new. Yeah. And they just dropped the price to $550. And I was like, are you kidding me? Like,
yeah, hey, to tear someone, it down.
Yeah, and yeah. Someone's living in it until probably June.
Yeah.
So, and then you have to tear it down and then, you know, redo it. Like, that's.
Yeah, I just want. But
bringing it down to $550. Like, let's think about this for a second.
Yeah, but then you wonder too, like, when people talk about inequality and like some people are like, oh, it's the greatest time in human history to be alive, which is probably broadly accurate. It's like, okay, but in a person's day-to-day life, like their micro existence, they see a house in their neighborhood coming down to $550 that's probably just going to get torn down. And they're like, some people just have too much money to experiment with, right?
Yeah.
That's like the only way to perceive it at like a day-to-day level. Like I can look at Africa and Asia and be like, oh man, there's like less malnutrition, there's less hunger, and like, you know, broadly like wages are okay. I don't know what's gonna happen in the next year, but like broadly wages are okay in the US and shit. But it's like, you know, then you look at your neighborhood and you're like, oh wow, someone's gonna buy that for $550 and then tear it down and make it into something else, you know. The one thing I read about Denver and like some real estate article that I read was that people, I don't know what your take on this is, but some, like, I want to say he was a commercial either developer or broker in Denver, was saying he felt there was going to be like a rebellion against downtown because it was like already getting costly and like people don't want to pay like $2,000 to live like next to Coors Field, even though it might be cool when you're like 25. So he thought that people were going to move to like the exurbs because there's more space, but you're still within like 25 minutes of metro or whatever. I feel like that could happen in a lot of cities, but I don't know what your perception of Denver is in terms of that. I have one friend that lives downtown Denver and he's like, oh yeah, it's fucking expensive. So,
oh yeah. It's obnoxious if you're trying to live down there. Like when I first moved out here in 2013, I lived in a building that was, no lie, 100 years old. There was a picture of it with a Model T in front of it. And small little place, and I was paying like 650, 660 a month for it. I moved out a year later, and within like 2 years of me moving out, that same apartment was going for like 900. And this is a super old building, super thin walls. Like, you can hear everything. Like, there is nothing good about the building. And it was going for almost $1,000. I was like, you got to be kidding me with that.
Yeah, it's ridiculous, man.
And then you have the new buildings that are going for, especially like in downtown, the probably going for, like you said, $2,000 a month for one bedroom. Now they're nice. They're brand new buildings built within the last couple years, but I don't want to spend that much on a place to rent. I would rather live out in the burbs somewhere. The public transportation isn't great. So like, you got to find a spot that's on the subway line, on the commuter rail line, to actually take advantage of it. But I would much rather live out in the burbs somewhere than try to live downtown.
Yeah, I agree with that. So you've been predominantly work from home on this new job anyway, right?
Yeah.
And that started, that was like, what, probably 5 to 6 months or more before all this shit?
Yeah, started end of November, right before Thanksgiving.
Okay, so this is just like my perception, having been working from home for a while, but since you have been at, in previous jobs a little bit, and then now, like, since November, pretty much consistently, do you think that, like, people are, like, kind of like going a little bit nuts about like how hard or challenging it is? Or I always kind of felt like, okay, most places in the first world or the US have like Wi-Fi, we have cloud access. Like, I agree, some of the stuff about like 7 hours worth of video calls is super tiring or whatever, but I don't think it's as hard as people make it. But maybe there are just like people that thrive off offices and stuff. So what's like been your overall perception on it?
I've talked to folks who I've used to work with who love being in the office because of that interaction. They're very outgoing and love just seeing people and talking to them. So that's been an adjustment for them. But I think at the same time, like, it's kind of a twofold issue. Like, those without kids, I think it's not as much of a challenge or issue. But I think, when you do have the kids, especially younger kids, like, that just adds a whole different layer of challenge to it that personally, I'm glad I'm not in that situation, because I can't imagine what that's like. I can't imagine trying to balance that and work.
On the same block with that 425K house, like, at the end of that block, there's a lady who I've talked to her a couple times. She teaches at SMU in Dallas, and it's like, she has three kids and they're all under six, and the youngest one is Down syndrome. And she actually has like a bunch of YouTubes about like parenting Down syndrome kids, which is pretty cool.
Oh, interesting.
But like, I literally, again, I'll walk Samson past her house during the day, and like, she'll be on like a Zoom thing on her porch, and there's just like three kids under six, like, running around doing like crazy shit on the front lawn. And it's like, there's like only supervision when it feels like there might be something really bad about to happen, right? If they're going to do something with my dog, or they're going to run into the street or whatever. But otherwise, it's like kind of like controlled chaos, right? So I think I agree with you on that, that I think the picture, if you have like four young kids or whatever, is very different than like you or I talking about it, for sure.
Yeah, we have that controlled chaos here as well. Like, there's a park in our neighborhood. It's a pretty quiet neighborhood. And the park, especially recently, there's just been like a group of kids just hanging out, not even doing anything, just like hanging out on the playground, and or like running around, riding their bikes, whatever. And I look around, it's like 9 o'clock at night. And I'm like, how are you not in bed at this point? Yeah. I'm almost ready for bed.
Yeah. My, the neighborhood that my girlfriend wants to buy a house in, they have a park like right in the middle of it. And I would say like, yeah, man, probably like 8 p.m. on like a Friday, maybe like 2 weeks ago. I was like, we had picked up food or something, and I like drove her through it because she wanted to look at some shit that's like available. And the park right in the middle of it probably had like 44 kids on it. I was like, oh man, I don't know if this is like, I don't know like what societal hot take to put this with, like about parenting or whatever, you know. But it was like, there were probably 44 kids and like 7 observable parents. So you're like doing the math and you're like, huh, like some of these kids are either unsupervised or their parents told one of these parents to watch them, you know? So it was interesting. And I feel like that's actually more common than people are like openly admitting, you know?
Oh yeah. Like in our neighborhood, even early on, we were seeing parents like hang out in front yards, like social distance themselves and like hang out in the front yard and have some drinks as the kids just run through the neighborhood.
Yeah.
And I'm like, all right, well, I guess good for you for getting outside and enjoying some of the sunshine. But your kid, sir, is 3 blocks away running up and down.
Yeah.
What's going on right now?
Yeah. Okay, so I had like 2 more things I want to ask you. So first of all, like, because you see hot takes about this all the time, do you think from your, I mean, I know like what you do with him recruiting and TA is obviously like its own like special area or whatever, but do you think that, like, do you think anything's going to like broadly change about recruiting? Or like, do you think there'll be like some type of seismic shift, or do you have any like general perceptions of like what late 2020, early 2021 might look like in that respect?
I can't say that I feel like there's going to be any real seismic shift in anything.
Right.
I think you will see organizations, or even, you know, groups within organizations, you know, recognize the benefits of working remotely. And so they'll do more, you know, video interviewing and, you know, make sure that the team is set up so that they can bring on new people who work remotely. I think at the same time, like those companies that end up saying, yes, everyone back into the office, I'd be shocked if you don't see a lot of turnover at those companies.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Because we're at, you know, however many months of people work remotely full time, and I'm sure there are some people who are very much enjoying it, you know, others who would want a balance between in the office and working remotely, that if the company's saying, all right, back in the office full time 5 days a week, I'd be shocked if there's not people saying, you know what, I'm sure I can find another group that is more flexible.
Yeah.
And I think that's probably going to be the biggest thing.
Yeah, I don't even think people are talking about that much, but I agree with that. I think you already see, like, there's a couple LinkedIn threads that, like, bigger names start where they're like, hey, list companies that are hiring that are over 90% remote, you know, and it's a lot of like random like tech startup space stuff with like 100 to 300 employees, right? But I think more people are probably going to seek that out, especially if they're in the bucket of, oh, I enjoyed this as opposed to like an office context, you know. So I could see turnover from that for sure.
And then, like, not to highlight, you know, Twitter and like, oh, big tech is doing it, but, you know, them rolling out, everyone can work remotely all the time, you know, unless there's like an emergency or, you know, urgent need for them to be on site. I'd be shocked if there's not companies that try to follow that lead. Like, I've seen clients who, even within the giant organization, you know, groups and departments start to recognize that, hey, maybe they can have people work remotely. And maybe that will be, you know, a selling point for some of the part-time work, and, you know, realizing that they don't need that person to be on site because the schedule is not consistent. And so you're not going to get people interested if they have to drive half an hour for a schedule that's not the same thing week in and week out. That give them the heads up that, hey, next week they have to clock in at 2 versus, you know, noon.
Right.
You can do that at home without any issue.
Right. I'm a little bit worried about the salary ecosystem, just because I feel like, okay, so I've heard something like 40 to 55% was like service industry plus hospitality in terms of layoffs. So on those jobs, it's kind of like when there's a demand surge, like there'll be, and that might take a year or more, but the hiring context for that is like a little bit different. But if you're looking at like white collar, I do feel like you see a bunch of like lead gen marketing, like trade show type jobs get laid off. Mm. I see that a lot on LinkedIn. So I just wonder, like, okay, any salary number is theoretically higher than zero. So I'm just like concerned if there's going to be like a desperation comp model, and probably more in shitty companies and not like well-run companies, but where people are going to be like, oh, I know I can get somebody for like 20K under what they made at their last full-time role because they're desperate for consistent, like every 2 weeks, every month income, right? So I do worry about that a little bit.
Oh, yeah, because you're also seeing, I've talked to candidates who talked to one earlier this week, I think, who said, you know, I'm just trying to be strategic here. And you know, I really need a job, support my family.
Right.
That I know if I say, you know, I'm looking for 120, that's not necessarily going to have me stick out. But because of the situation that I'm in, I'll take 90.
Right. Or like, honestly, like 70, man. Mm, like that 60 Minutes one, like 2 weeks ago, there was some chick in Philadelphia who was like, I was making 135, and now I'm talking to people about 75, right? And you can live, like, Philadelphia's expensive. You could live okay on 75 if you budgeted, right? But that's still a $60,000 a year pay cut, right? Like, I mean, that's almost half your salary at 135,
right? That's quite a lifestyle change.
Yeah. So, but it's like 75 is still higher than zero. So that's what I wonder, like, if that will be pronounced. I think there are some CEOs and stuff, CFOs are like people that have ultimate, like, comp band decision authority. I think there are some that are going to realize, oh, like a lot of people did economically struggle during this time, so like we should be kind of like not bankrupt ourselves, but we should be fair or like semi-equitable coming out of this, right?
But
I think you'll see some companies that are just going to be like, oh, I know I can get you at 80 where it would normally be 140, so I'm going to try to get you at 80. So that's like my one concern I have about it, and hopefully it's not super at scale, you know. But
I'll be intrigued to see if more candidates are taking that approach of, yes, I can make this in normal times, but because of where I'm at and what's going on, you know, I'm desperate. I'm willing to take that 60K pay cut. Like when I was talking to that guy who was like, yeah, I'll go for 90, even though I can probably, you know, get the job for 120.
Uh-huh.
I was like, you know what? I'm not going to say that when I send your information over.
Right. We're just,
I'll give you a little bit of a bump and say you're looking minimum 100, get you a little bit closer, you know, say 100 to 120, get you into that normal salary range and see what happens from there. But like if more candidates are doing that, then yeah, it's kind of that, you know, the snowball effect where they started to do that, you know, hiring managers, you know, the companies start to say, all right, well, we don't need to pay that much. We can find them for cheaper. And then it just kind of keeps escalating from there.
Yeah. Okay, so last thing I was going to ask you is, we were talking about this a little bit the last time we talked, where it got interrupted, but, like, what are some of the big things you feel like, you know, obviously you moved cross-country and stuff. What are some of the big things you feel like in the last, like, 5 to 8 years? Maybe, like, philosophy shifts or life shifts or whatever that you feel like you've gone through in the process of, like, trying to figure out adulthood and shit. Because I'm not there even remotely. But I feel like in the last, like, 5, 10 years, I've had a bunch of stuff I could, like, point to. So do you have any that jump out for you off the top of your head?
I know for me, part of it's just been being better at being an adult.
Yeah.
So certainly not there either. But I've come quite a bit away from where I was at, what, 21, 22.
Yeah.
You know, even when I was living in Boston at 25.
Didn't you have a karaoke story in there?
I feel like
we almost went down that rabbit hole.
Oh, yeah. There's There's a number of stories from my Boston time.
From your Boston era. So basically, you just stayed out with a bunch of random people doing karaoke.
Yeah.
Is that the essence of it? Yeah.
I even did that here when I first moved out to Denver. Ended up at a bar after like bocce or something in the park, and made friends with a group of like 3 people who I never had met before, and then went with them to the next bar, and then the next bar, and then we found ourselves meeting up with a group of like 12 50-year-olds who were out for a birthday on a Thursday night, and
that's a brutal Friday too, man.
It was fantastic, and I love seeing it when it pops up on my Facebook memories as I check in at a bar that I had never been to before.
With people you had just met recently, yeah.
Yeah, I met within the last, like, hour and a half.
Probably, like, 2-3 years ago. Yeah, probably about 3 years ago. It was, like, some random Friday night, and a bunch of my friends here had, like, shit to do or whatever. I don't know. So I was like, I don't want to sit by myself. So I went to some bar, and this bar had $184, like, tray of, like, all these, like, meats and cheeses and shit, right? And so I started talking to the guy next to me, and these people came in, and I think they were legitimate gypsies, right? Like, actual gypsies, and they ordered the 184 thing, and they finished, like, 25% of it. And so they were like, you guys want this? And I had, like, just started talking with this guy. So we started eating, like, the other 75%. These gypsies were still there. Somehow we, like, started talking to them. And they were like, hey, you guys want to go to this other bar that we know? So it was, like, the exact same thing. Like, I ended up going to, like, 4 bars with this random, like, couple that lived in a van or whatever. Right? And on, like, the 4th bar... we had, like, gained 6 more people, and they were like, hey, you guys want to go to this, like, cabaret strip club thing? And it was, like, 1 in the morning, right? And I'm like, yeah, I'll do it. And I remember I literally got to this cabaret strip club. I was in, like, one of these people's cars who, like, hadn't been drinking. And I walked in, and I was there for, like, maybe 45 seconds, and I'm like, I'm gonna get an Uber. Like, that was my, like, pinnacle, where I was like, okay, I think this is it. But in the moment, it's, like, super fun, and I probably saw it pop up, like, 3 months ago on something, and you're like, oh, shit, yeah, that was, like, a crazy random night. But I don't think, unless you're, like, a trust fund kid or you have, like, an indestructible liver, I don't think that stuff scales when you become an adult, or, like, more of an adult, you know? So
yeah, and I think the same thing with college. Like, I had a fantastic time in college. It was, you know, I don't regret anything I did, or you know, I think picking the school that I did was the right choice. But to go back and relive it, no thanks, I'm good. Right. It was a good time while it happened, but that was what, 10 years ago. I'm good now.
Yeah, for sure. Do you? I guess this is kind of like my last thing. What do you think? Like, what's your perception as a dude of like kind of the evolution of like male friendship or whatever? I feel like I'm probably like 15 out of college, and I'm still like good friends with like probably 7 dudes from college, but I do feel like as people start having kids and you're not geographically in the same place, it's harder. And I probably talk to them contextually less. I don't think we're like not friends, but I probably talk to them contextually less, right? And then I do think when you move, because you've moved too, I think there's an initial wave of like, oh, you can like bond with people in a new area. But then there's almost like an age threshold on that, I feel like, where maybe like 35, it feels like you're either in this like kids and the, like that channel of activities, or like the, or like bars and that channel of activities. So I don't know what your perception as a dude and someone that's moved like 2 or 3 times would be on that.
Yeah, I'd say I've been in a very similar boat. Like, there's a group of guys I still talk to from college. Talk to them on a regular basis? No. You know, can certainly probably talk with them more often. But you definitely start to see that, like, there's a group of them who all still live in the Buffalo area.
Oh, yeah.
And so they, you know, they get together to get together to, you know, watch the, you know, UFC fights and whatnot. Right. You know, they all have season tickets to Canisius College basketball.
Right.
So they, you know, they see each other, you know, and hang out pretty frequently. And so with everything that's going on now, I realize that, like, you see how much they do hang out, because now there's a weekly Zoom call where they like to do trivia each week. Right. And, you know, I certainly don't join every week, but like it's there. And then you start to realize like how much they actually did hang out because they are so close.
Right. And the proximity thing is big, man.
Oh yeah.
I think as you get older, it's like super bigger. Like, I was talking to some guy, well, I used to work for some guy for like a year or two, where he was older, but like all his, like, he had kids later, and like all his friends were like 15 years younger than him, because they were like dads in his school, his kids' school, yeah. And it was like, oh, this is like, it was weird. Like, I went out with them once to some like barbecue and whiskey concept restaurant, and it was like weird because it's probably like 2 years ago, so I was probably like 36. This guy was like 52, and then all the dads he was hanging out with were like 34, right? So it's like this weird tier of like people drinking. I think it was during the 17 NCAA tournament, so I don't even remember who won that year. I guess North Carolina, but like, it was in that tournament. It was like the Sweet 16 round. And I remember just being like, this is weird. Like, I wonder if these 34-year-olds think that hanging out with this 52-year-old is weird. Mm. But then I'm like, man, maybe this is what male friendship is. You know? Like, right. As you get older, maybe that's just like the evolution of it, you know? So I never came to a conclusive answer on that, but
then you throw in like work friends in there too. Yeah. And you know how real those are aren't as you switch jobs.
Vadim and I talk about that all the time, because like I got laid off from Star in like a wave, and then he left Star, and he's like, man, I don't fucking talk to anybody from there. And there used to be like girls there that were like devotees of him, would like call him on weekends for like fashion advice and shit. And he's like, I don't talk to anybody there. And he's like, were all those relationships fake? And I'm like, no, I just think there's like a proximity in a work context too. Like, even if you're not geographically proximal, you're like, oh, this is a coworker of mine. But then once that bond is over, or that connection is over, you like don't think as much about the person. It's weird.
Yeah, it's really weird. And I think like when I left my job of 6 years, like how many people I worked with for 4 or 5, you know, all 6 of those years, like at first, you know, still touch base with a few of them, but now it's been what, a year and a half. And like, I may occasionally text one or two of them, but it's no like in-depth conversation
It's like over.
Yeah, it's like, oh hey, happy birthday, by the way, or you know, congrats on the kid.
Yeah. It's like you spent like 4 to 5 years like consistently having to deal with them on like work plus social shit, you know? And it's weirdly not there.
Yeah, it's very odd, and very intriguing at the same time too, just seeing how it plays out and how it changes over time. Like, not that I'm not friendly with any of them. It's kind of like the college friends where it's not that you're not friendly and not friends in some way, but you're just, you don't talk nearly as often or as frequently as you did. Thank you.